All right, well, good evening. I'm going to go ahead and call our City of Columbia Council meeting for Monday, November 4th, 2024 to order. And I'll please, ask everyone who is able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sheila, will you please call roll?
Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Ms. Carroll?
Here.
Ms. Meyer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
All right, well, good evening. Welcome to our City Council meeting. The public have multiple opportunities to speak at Columbia City Council meetings. You may speak under public hearing, old business, and new business portions of the agenda. Please confine remarks to the legislation being discussed. General comments on other topics will be allowed at the end of our City Council meetings. Individuals are allotted 3 minutes for discussion, with representatives of the organizations affected by the legislation being discussed given 5 minutes. I do ask that we limit that to one speaker per group. Multiple people can speak at 3 minutes, and to respect those time limits for fairness. And do let me know if you are representing an organization so that I can let Peyton know to change the time clock to have 5 minutes. We do ask for people to avoid applause and boos and demonstrations, addressing issues, not individuals, and refrain from personal attacks, including on city staff. Disruptions will be addressed with a warning and, if necessary, removal and recess, and we might take a pause. So we'll move on in our agenda. Up first, we have the minutes. So I'll make a motion to approve the October 21st, 2024 council meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Lisa Meyer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Moving on to approval of our agenda. Lisa, I believe you've asked for R18924 to be removed from the consent agenda.
Yes, ma'am.
And that will go under new business. Are there any other changes to the agenda? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda with R18924 being moved to new business. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick Foster. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right. We don't have any special items or appointments to boards and commissions, though I feel like I also should say that we are still accepting applications to vacancies on boards and commissions. You have until 5 p.m. This coming Friday to apply, so go check out our city website if you want to be more involved. Scheduled public comment is up next. So members of the public can contact the city manager's office by noon the Wednesday prior to a city council meeting to schedule a public comment. Scheduled public comment cannot be on items that are on that same night's agenda, and the exception is for topics under report section. Of note, it's been typical practice for the city council to address or bring up additional follow-up from the questions that are asked during scheduled public comment during our general comments at the end. So watch for that. And then tonight, we had two scheduled public comments. Unfortunately, our second one is unable to be here this evening. And so we will, if the schedule allows with their schedule, move them to the next meeting, and we'll have the city manager's office reach out to them. So I would like to ask our one and only Chris Jones to please come forward for a scheduled public comment.
My name is Chris Jones. Tonight my topic is, who do you call when the city doesn't care? I frequently talk with people. I know none of you are surprised that I'm a talker, and I do like to meet people, I like to talk with people, both people I do know and people who I don't know, people who I agree with and people who I don't. I do talk to people a lot about what goes on in the city. I consider myself as somebody who does spread information about what does happen here at the city, because often people don't have the time, they don't have the effort, can't make the effort due to XYZ, children at home, various reasons. But there are other reasons why you don't see a lot of people here tonight. And when I got my topic tonight, I did not mean just the local city government that's here and staff. I mean the city as a whole. Who do you call when people in the city just don't care? Now, but one problem that we do see in here is that in the city, we tend to talk at people. We don't talk with people. People love to talk, they love to speak for people, but they don't actually sit down with people and they don't tell people, or they don't ask people what they need. Instead, they say, well, according to what I believe, this is what you need. Well, often what you think that people need and what people actually need are not the same things. However, here's many of the things that people think that you don't care about. We don't have enough affordable housing in Columbia. It used to be something that we would say that live simply so others can simply live. However, now we're talking about everybody needs granite countertops. We've had two different local government people say that we don't have enough rich people housing. We have no co-responders. The deaths, which has resulted in deaths of people having mental health crises, an escalation of issues resulting in higher incarceration rates. Deaths of several unhoused people every winter due to the weather. Someone has been shooting at the unhoused people and and aid workers with pellet guns in Columbia, yet haven't heard a single comment from the city. Ashley Street is full, and yet another shelter is closing. No showers are available in the winter for unhoused people with mobility issues. Economic and racial segregation in the city is rampant. City is encouraging jobs that don't pay living wages. We want more rich people housing. Black drivers have five times the racial disparity as white drivers. The president of the local school board recently told me that we can't always think about poor people. And that's something that I hear a lot, it feels like, from the people setting up on the dais. We have a transit system that's on a skeleton crew with 90-minute routes, making it unavailable for most riders, people who need it. You're only able to receive utility relief if you are elderly, have a minor child, or receive SSDI. This ignores the working poor, those who are applying for SSDI but have not received it yet, and those who have lost their jobs. Barriers with communicating with city leaders. You're not meeting people where they're at. Instead of actually speaking with people, you are telling them what words they're allowed to say when you're allowed to meet with them. Instead of having regular hours that you will meet with people, they have to arrive at hours that are not available to them. The food bank has stopped going to Oak Towers and Paquin Towers, both of which only serve those who are disabled and or elderly and in extreme poverty. So how can you help? I know I've mentioned a lot of problems, but the ARC has showers that can be used for the mobility challenged in the winter who are unhoused. You need to be hearing from the people who actually need your help, who may not use the prettiest of language. Listen, when people talk, and don't just listen to the straight white rich people, the straight middle class rich people. You need to actually listen to the people who you affect. Fix transit. Do inclusionary zoning. Enforce source of income ordinance. Invest more in poor children. Make it easier for people to speak with you. Hold office hours on a consistent basis. Co-responders made a high priority.
You,
and
Chris.
Very last thing, zero tolerance for racism and discrimination.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to old business. Sheila, will you please read Bill 24624?
Council Bill 24624 is an ordinance granting the issuance of a conditional use permit to Matthew Patterson to allow the operation of a short-term rental on property located at 1419 North Azalea Street, providing a severability clause and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
So as I understand this was on the consent agenda. However, the applicant is out of town and unable, so requested to table it. Is that correct, Tim?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay, so we don't necessarily need to do the staff report, can save it, and we can just motion to table?
Correct.
Okay, so I'll make a motion at the request of the applicant to table Bill 24624 to the November 18th, 2024 council meeting. Do I have a second? Seconded by Roy. All those in favor of the tabling, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, moving on. Thank you. All right, now, Sheila, will you please read Bill 260-24?
Council Bill 260-24 is an ordinance authorizing an agreement with the U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Highway Administration associated with the FY 2022 and FY 2023 Charging and Fueling Infrastructure Grant Program, authorizing a memorandum of understanding with Daniel Boone Regional Library for installation of an electric vehicle charging station, amending the FY 2025 budget, annual budget by appropriating funds, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, you do. Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Eric Kempel. I'm the manager of the Office of Sustainability. Also here is Angela Scott, Associate Director at the Daniel Boone Regional Library. So the item before you has three parts: authorization of the grant agreement with Federal Highway Administration, authorizing the memorandum of understanding with the Daniel Boone Regional Library, and then amending the budget and appropriating funds. The total project cost covered under the grant agreement is approximately $4.5 million. Of that, $3.6 million is federally funded, and $900,000 is paid in local match. That comes from two sources, three sources. The city sources are parking and capital project investment income funds, and then the Daniel Boone Regional Library. The city's portion of the match is about $850,000, and the Daniel Boone Regional Library portion is about $45,000. This project supports the Climate Action Adaptation Plan transportation strategy areas of encouraging encouraging use of low to zero emission vehicles, specifically by placing charging stations in public parking areas, multifamily residences, and in city-owned parking garages near City Hall. The emissions offset of the chargers is likely close to 115 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalents, which greenhouse gases, essentially, and that's on an annual basis, that it's equivalent to about 100 cars. Project will install publicly accessible level 2 and level 3 DC fast charger stations at four different locations. Three of these are on city-owned property, and one is at the Daniel Boone Regional Library in the library's overflow parking area by the La Colomba sculpture. The three city-owned areas are Fifth and Walnut Parking Garage, Short Street Parking Garage, and the Columbia Regional Airport. You can see in that diagram where the locations are. I want to take a moment to explain some of the details on this slide. This is a more detailed and zoomed-in section of the map on the previous slide. The green marks are the location of publicly available chargers in Columbia at the time that we wrote the application in May of 2023. So you can see the majority of these are located along the I-70 corridor. The red marks are the project locations in the central city area for the grant, and the purple shaded area represent priority census tracts designated by the Federal Highway Administration, and they designate those based on impacts of climate change, pollution, environmental hazards, and to folks living in those areas, and then also gaps in transportation infrastructure and public services. So this designation certainly guided the selection of sites for this, for the application that we ended up presenting. And finally, the number of ports, that's used to indicate essentially the number of vehicles that can be charged simultaneously at a location. It can also be thought of as the number of cords, electric vehicle charging cords at a location. So at the Short Street Parking Garage, there are four level two ports and two DC fast charge ports. Fifth and Walnut has 14 level two, and Daniel Boone Regional Library site has four level two ports. Let's see, I had a few things more I wanted to say about that. Certainly. So since the writing of the application in May of 2023, there have been additional chargers installed, but the distribution area of the chargers has remained largely the same. So I think the impact of the sites that we chose during the process is still significant. A couple of notes about two of the sites. You know, in a forward-thinking move, Public Works designed and built the Short Street parking garage in 2013 with some EV-ready features, and that's really going to benefit the final design and construction of the chargers that we'll install there at the Short Street parking garage, and that's the one furthest to the east in this slide. The Fifth and Walnut garage chargers will serve both the public and also our city fleet EV needs with those 14 level 2 chargers. So all the chargers that are installed with this grant funding have to be publicly accessible, publicly available, and it does not preclude use by the city for charging our EV fleet. A little bit on this slide, the lighter purple boxes indicate multifamily housing structures, and generally multifamily housing, multifamily residents have fewer charging options than single-family housing residents. So the library and Short Street locations provide public charging options that are close to residents in those buildings, which is one of the priorities of the charging and fueling infrastructure grant program. Finally, the airport location, so the third of the city-owned locations. This portion of the project will emphasize level 3 DC fast charge, and that will serve the traveling public both at the airport and along US 63, and also will support the electrification of the rental car fleets that are active there at the airport now, and will serve as a regional EV charging resource. One thing that's not really captured on this, the area map, is that for residents in and around the Ashland area, the closest publicly available charging is either here in Columbia, in Fulton, or in Jefferson City. So providing something in that middle ground really helps both in the corridor charging, so the longer distance charging, but then also folks who might need more local options. So with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have.
Yeah, questions for staff. Roy has a question.
How many charging stations will be at the airport?
So we don't have a definite answer on that right now. In the course of moving from our grant application to the final grant agreement, we adjusted the scope of the Daniel Boone Regional Library project. And so we haven't had the opportunity to do as much engineering, informal preliminary engineering on that site. My estimate, based purely on budget, is around 4.
Additional questions? I've got Nick and then Don.
First, I want to say that I'm very pleased about this, to see this happening. One of the things that is holding back EVs in general, electric vehicles in general, is the ability to charge them. And there needs to be a sensitivity about those folks who are not able to charge their cars at home and for whom that's the difficulty. So these multifamily, the connection to multifamily units is really important. In answering some of the questions we asked beforehand, you said that the library would be charging, they would be able to gain revenue from the use of the chargers. I'm wondering if that's going to be true also for the city chargers as
yes.
well. I assume that at level 3 in particular, that would be true.
Yes. The being able to charge fees for the charging is allowable under the grant. Yeah. Okay. And that, from our initial conversations, that seems like the intent.
And just out of curiosity, well, beyond curiosity, a little bit actually, but do we know who the vendor is going to be for these?
We do not, no.
Okay.
Don, you had a question?
Just some informational. Are these all going to be plug-in type chargers? as opposed to, I know there's a technology that I've seen to where similar to like your smartphone, you could just lay it on the charging pad. You don't have to plug it in.
Plug-in chargers is how we did our initial preliminary engineering and then costing. So,
these will all be plug-in, and then 2 and 3 is just basically differentiating how fast they charge. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Betsy.
I'm going a little bit outside of perhaps this memo, but it talks about this grant being for deploying EV charging infrastructure, hydrogen fueling infrastructure, propane fueling infrastructure, and natural gas fueling infrastructure. Are those going to be coming up for us in the future, or?
So that is the intent of the grant program at the federal level. That's what that language indicates.
It's not what we would be doing locally?
We, not as a part of this grant application, and I am not aware of any hydrogen or other fueling projects.
So the $4.5 million is strictly for EV?
Correct.
And we're going to be using this up completely with what you've described?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Just you showed on the map the access for the multifamily units. Yes, on this one. You kind of touched on it a little bit. In your opinion, you know, what does this grant do for making it more accessible for low to zero emission vehicles being used by some of maybe like low income or those who live in our multifamily housing who don't have access to an outlet on the outside or a charging station at there? That's one of the barriers that you wrote the application to overcome. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think the library location is the most accessible location. I think it also provides more access, easier access to consumers who might live and own an EV vehicle, an electric vehicle in that area. So really providing low barrier options for folks who live in and around that area. There starts to be more of a range of income as you move further away from that site, for sure, at least in my impression. So I think we can do more to make locations more accessible to more different kinds of people. And I think the library is the most accessible.
And then I have two additional follow-up questions. One, we sought this in part because of the cap trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Can you remind me what's our current percentage of emissions for the city that is associated with transportation?
Yeah. It's close to, it's 22 to 24%, something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it is our second largest single category of emissions.
Okay. And then the second is, and this might be a question for you or something I can ask at the end of the meeting to Dave Sorrell, but does our electric utility offer incentives for people purchasing electric vehicles to help bring down the cost?
I'm not aware of anything on the vehicle purchase, but they do have charger incentives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's still the federal government incentive for electric vehicle purchases, right?
Yes. Tax credits. And charging infrastructure. I didn't mention that in the report or these slides, but the 20% that we are providing in match is also eligible for federal incentives. So we can get some, we will be applying for some tax credit incentives for that $850,000-ish. So
I see that Director Sorrell came in, but if he answered it correctly, his answer can go. All right, thank you, Eric. You had a question for it.
It's more of a quick statement about using low and moderately income. These vehicles are still high.
That's why that's with incentives.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, and that was great because I was about to say, like, I love the question of incentives, but putting it in low and moderately income areas, a lot of those people cannot afford these cars. So let's be realistic when we're using words like low and moderately income and placing of charging stations when most of those people cannot afford those cars.
Yeah, that's why I was asking about the incentives. Thank you, Eric. Any other questions before I open up for public comment? Does anyone from the public wish to speak on Bill 26024, accepting a grant for the charging infrastructure grant?
Chris Jones, Second Ward. I did speak to Eric and Angela right before council started, just to make for sure. The library had had plans to take out one of the disabled parking spots and able in order to put this in. They have since changed the plan, so I would just like a commitment from the city, because we already do not have enough disabled parking, especially downtown, that you guys will not be taking out any disabled parking in order to put these in. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public wish to speak on Bill 26024? Seeing none, we'll come back to council comments. For the location in our, have we already picked the locations in the city-owned facilities for where the charging infrastructure will go?
Oh, what floor of the parking garage?
Yeah, just to answer that kind of question about, we're not removing any of our parking spots that are for accessibility.
So one of the considerations, one of the requirements is that we provide ADA accessible charger locations.
Okay.
So that's the scope that we were really looking at, the impact on ADA potential users, was to make sure that we were providing a charging option for them. It's certainly a great idea to make sure that we're not negatively impacting the overall ADA parking balance, for sure. At both 5th and Walnut and Short Street, I know the most about those locations. There are currently no ADA spaces in the 5th and Walnut location. Short Street, it's been a while since I was on that level, and so I'm not, I can't recall exactly what the impact might be. Like I said, I think it's certainly something that we should account for, is looking at the overall ADA parking balance.
Yeah.
So,
great.
Yeah.
Any other council comments? Yeah, Lisa.
At the last meeting, we had a discussion about the electric utility and challenges. And I'm just wondering if we should be concerned about the draw of, and if you think that's of great concern, or, and I realize the demand is changing, and I'm just concerned that maybe we're not being proactive enough with, as we're preparing to have more electric vehicles and the draw on our electric services.
So I will let you know what we did as far as electric utility infrastructure. Is when it gets beyond the local equipment, then that'd be a better question for Director Sorrell. But what we did when we were initially screening for locations was to look at the available utility infrastructure. So what the transformers essentially was our first limiting component, and made sure that we sized the installations according to what was there already. So especially at Short Street, which is the downtown location with the DC fast chargers, those have more of an impact on the utility infrastructure. And what's the transformer that is currently at the location that serves the Short Street garage is sufficient to handle the loads that would be increased as a result of this project. So that's what we did as far as the on-site existing. Anything beyond that would be outside of what I could comment on.
And I guess a clarifying on to that one is, if the city were to eventually adopt time of use rates, charging infrastructure can also adjust the rates that are charged for it based on the local utilities rate structure. So something that might help more with that is, we pay more in peak demand. We haven't necessarily had a huge growth in overall demand. If I'm their load, it's more of in that peak demand, which is what cost us the most. So if you have that, then it incentivizes people not to charge during the time when we pay the most to the MISO grid and elsewhere.
There are some rules about
charge.
How you can. People. Yeah, right. The charging for money and the charging for vehicles gets the whole gets complicated when you try to talk about it. But yes, we there are some rules as to how much in advance customers have to know about the cost to charge. And there's been recent guidance that indicates that we can take into account peak pricing, and so that is an option to be able to take account for that.
Any other council comments?
Clarify where the funds are coming from that we're matching. They're coming from the enterprise fund, correct?
Where are your matching funds coming from?
They're coming from the parking fund and the capital improvement project investment. Where's Matthew? Income fund. I've got the words here on the.
They're not coming
capital
from
project
utility.
Investment income fund. So the, yeah.
Do you need clarification? Are you good? All right. Any other questions from council? All right, Sheila, will you please call roll on Bill 26024?
Council Bill 26024, Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
No.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. I'll also say just a quick congratulations on that grant. We were the only one in Missouri who received it when you applied that first time. So congratulations to staff on that.
I'll pass that along.
Thank you. Sheila, will you please read the items on the consent agenda twice and call roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 247-24, 248-24, 249-24, 250-24, 251-24, 252-24, 253-24, 254-24, 255-24, 256-24, 257-24, 258-24, 259-24, and resolutions 184-24, 185-24, 186-24, 187-24, 188-24, 190-24, 191-24, 192-24, and 193-24. Bills 247-24, 248-24, 249-24, 250-24, 251-24, 252-24, 253-24, 254-24, 255-24, 256-24, 257-24, 258-24, 259-24, and resolutions 184-24, 185-24, 186-24, 187-24, 188-24, 190-24, 191-24, 192-24, and 193-24. Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
All right, moving on to new business. We had resolution 189-24 pulled from consent. So Sheila, will you please read 189-24?
Council Bill 189-24 is a resolution authorizing a First Amendment to the funding agreement with the Voluntary Action Center for the construction of a nonprofit social service agency to be located at 1300 Bowling Street to provide supportive services to unhoused and low-income persons.
Do we have a staff report?
Hi, yes, Rebecca Roslett, Public Health and Human Services Director. This is the First Amendment to the Voluntary Action Center contract for the Opportunity Campus Agreement. This amendment will allow for an additional $133,333.33 to be provided to Voluntary Action Center for that project. Originally, they asked for $3.8 million, and the city awarded them $3 million, so this additional funds just helps them close the gap on their project. These funds became available as a result of two city projects that were to be funded through the ARPA dollars that city staff realized we were not going to be able to implement in the ARPA timeline. And those projects were the pallet homes as well as the additional utility assistance. So then staff made recommendations as to how to reallocate those dollars so that they could be spent within the ARPA timeframe. And this is the recommendation from staff to give this extra funding to Voluntary Action Center for the purposes of their proposal. Happy to take any questions.
Questions from council. Lisa, do you have a question?
Sure, I do, yes. I've had some constituents ask some questions, and I'll appreciate your help with this. Would you re-clarify exactly what these funds are supposed to be used for?
So They, within the amendment, we do not give specific parameters as to what they are allowed to use the funds for. They all have to qualify under as an ARPA eligible use. So this is additional funding to their current project.
Do you want to expand upon what their current project is that the funds are going towards?
I would be happy to. So part of the, and I have others here who can help me if necessary, because this is a very large project. So Voluntary Action Center's project is to provide supportive services to unhoused and low-income individuals. They are building a structure to do so. As I mentioned, their original request was for $3.8 million. The funds will be used to construct the Opportunity Campus. They can use these funds to cover building and utility fees. There is a fees also include water and sewage connections. They're going to have construction-related costs.
But the concept is that a lot of this money will come back to us, correct? For our fees, for our shelter. I'm just making sure that's clearly understood.
They can come back to us, yeah, for part of it, as well as elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Additional questions? Don, did you have a question?
Not so much in this particular request, but do we have, since we have to obligate this by the end of the year, the additional million and whatever it is that the city is not going to be able to use, do we have some ideas as to where we're going to use that?
With this particular project or with other agencies?
Other projects.
Yes, we've already brought several amendments to council to reallocate, and I believe we have a couple of more yet to come. Okay. But the goal is absolutely to have all of the funds allocated by the deadline.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Additional questions before I open up for public comment? Council? All right, would anybody from the public wish to speak on resolution 18924? Seeing none, we'll come back to the council comments. Any council comments before I have Sheila call roll? Questions, clarifying questions, anything? All right, Sheila, will you please call roll on resolution 18924?
Council Bill 18924, Mr. Waterman?
No.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
No.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Moving on to introduction and first reading. Sheila, will you read the items under intro and first reading?
All bills introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated, bills 261-24, 262-24, 263-24, 264-24, 265-24, 266-24, 267-24, 268-24, 269-24, and 270-24, and 271-24, first reading.
Thank you for that. Moving on now to our reports section. Our first one is a report from the Business Loop Community District. This is an annual report sent to us for their fiscal year. I don't assume we have any sort of, this is really information only, and it's required to be submitted to them by the city, by the state statute. I don't know if any council had any questions on it.
No All right. questions, just that they're doing an amazing job.
Yeah, they're doing work. All right, now moving on to report 7224. This is the payment in lieu of tax by the water and light utilities. Do we have a staff report? I see Mr. Sorrell there.
Well, I didn't really prepare a staff report. I think the report pretty much speaks for itself. I'd be happy to answer questions, but in summary, you know, recently there's been questions about the methodology used and what equivalent taxes the utility is transferring to the general fund. Similar, identical type situation came up in the early 60s. It was litigated in 1964. The Circuit Court of Boone County said that ruled in favor of the city and said that is up to the council to determine. And then they actually reduced the transfer in 1975 by eliminating the income tax components of that transfer.
Yeah. Any questions from council for Mr. Sorrell? Yeah, Lisa.
So, I don't think this is really directed for you. I think this is really something.
Move this up a little bit.
I think this will be more for the council to discuss when the time is right. But I think thank you for all of the information, and it's really nice to have it in one comprehensive report. I thank you, because we've gathered a lot of this information, but it was very helpful to have it all in one place. I believe the question still remains, it's not can, it should. Should we be using the percentage of the funds? And that's not a question, sir, for you. That's going to be a question for the council, I believe. And I don't know if we should do this as a work session, take this deeper, but I think that we need to have an open discussion about this and really discern on if this is right for us to continue to do.
Can I clarify with you? Do you mean completely or to reanalyze the percentage of what it is that covered?
Well, I think if we're going to do an open analysis, we have to always think about no change, and then we have to think about radical change, and then we figure out the balance of between the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, the threats, and then how we can go about those calculations. Yeah. Properly.
And I know that DeCarlin does not have a voice this evening, but I believe it's been your intent to have the conversation as we start to talk about the next fiscal year when we talk about revenues and impact on it.
Exactly.
Okay, I gave you an out because you have no voice to do that discussion. I think one of the things that also the conversation, you know, it came up when we were doing utility rate increases. And obviously, you know, the audits that we do over analyzing and our cost of service and making sure that we're adequately covering the cost of service and also thinking about the impacts on rates. So, you know, I looked at my own, like the $7 I paid last month for Pilot for my electric bill and $2 for water. But then the bigger question is about how does that impact all levels of ratepayers? And so I believe, am I correct, that the Utility and Waterline Advisory Board, you're doing an analysis of the water cost of service study with Waterline Advisory Board, but they're also having the conversation about rate structures for making sure that we're thinking about potentials of different rate structures for different income levels or that sort of analysis to see best practice.
Affordability metric is included in the water cost of study, and it's been discussed with electric, which is a little more difficult than water just because there's such a wide variety of, yeah. It's hard to determine essential use.
Right.
At their next meeting, that's going to be one of the topics that they discuss with goals for this fiscal year.
Okay. Yeah, Nick.
You know, I'm fine to have, were you going to say something, Nancy?
I was going to put some words into Carlin's mouth since he can't speak. But when we've talked about this previously, we talked about trying to bring back that discussion of revenues as a whole as it relates to the budget, because you can't really talk about it in isolation with just water and light.
Fair
rates
enough.
and those kinds of expenses. It has to be done in the context of the budget as a whole. And I saw Matthew walk in as well. When we talked about that previously, I think it was maybe February, to come back with a look at rates and revenues as a part of the overall budget planning process so that council can make some of those decisions in a comprehensive fashion.
That sounds great. And February sounds good.
Nick, did you?
Well, you pretty well put the words in my mouth too, Nancy. I think that, you know, I'm fine to talk about this, but I think it has to be done within the context of the implications that it has otherwise. If we change the way that we set the pilot, that's a reduction of revenue into the general fund, which provides so many of our services. So do we look to replace those? Do we cut back on services? That, you know, it's more complicated than do we just eliminate this portion of the pilot?
Right.
And so I think that's the better place to have the conversation. And if I would anticipate hearing from Matthew and others in that regard about that.
And I think the other thing to that too is that, you know, we've heard a lot of the sort of confusion over just understanding your bill. And so I think the other part is the sort of consumer education and opportunities we have to be like, this is where your money goes. This is what it goes towards, because most people don't know what that means, that line item, if they even look at their bill for when things come. Did you have a Valerie? Did you have a comment or question?
I have some considerations, I guess. I definitely take to heart the comments about viewing changes to the pilot program in light of the rest of the budget, and certainly it can't be reviewed separately because of its impacts. I would like to begin the discussion ahead of the rest of the budget review so that we can understand the impacts before the budgeting process begins, because I think that's how we end up not being able to fully understand the impacts to the budget as the budget is in front of us and not able to make changes.
I think knowing then as we're scheduling the time, February is also the time that we start to talk about council priorities in the upcoming budget. So talking about revenues and some of these impacts before that would probably be of benefit, just so we don't all of a sudden get very excited about things and then you tell us we can never fund that. So to say, yeah. All right, well, thank you for this. Thank you for the additional information and historical information on this one. Appreciate it. Up next, we have Report 7324. This is the amendment to the fiscal year 24 and 25 annual budgets and interdepartmental transfer of funds. Did council have any questions on these like two things, three things if you count them both together? Did not see any, so. Moving on to general comments by the public. It is 7:46. This is very weird. Would anyone from the public wish to speak?
Good evening. Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. I brought the pilot issue up 5 months ago. Never did I ask about the gross receipts portion. I talked about it. I know what it is. I talked about the fraudulent annexation of the water plant, and then that led into the property tax issue. The rate increase that happened was because of that annexation. Finally, some information came forward, and it showed that after that annexation, the cost to the water utility went up $405,403.02. Cause of that. And it was a no physical impact. And the report was, well, it was between funds and so we don't really count it as a physical impact. That really concerns me. Does the administration have any understanding of enterprise funds that came directly from customers to pay to the general fund? Effectively a tax without a vote. I talked to the former director. The water utility never pushed for the annexation. It all came from the deputy city manager. And I can give you his phone number if you'd like to talk to him. With the $40 million and based on what the 2023 calculation was, it will cost the water utility $887,488. At the completion of that improvement that year. So the very least that you should do, and not wait until next year, is to take the water plant out of that calculation, because it was misrepresented to the council at that time. It directly impacted customers unnecessarily at that 4.whatever% rate increase was all because of the water plant annexation. The impact in 2029 and the future impact of the completion of those improvements. So I don't expect you to eliminate the whole thing because that would be over a $5 million hit. You could do everything going forward if there's any seriousness about selling the utility, then it would depreciate out over time and it wouldn't be a big hit. It would slowly go away if you did the whole thing for everything new at the Columbia rate rather than the entire. But the very least you should do is to turn back the water plant amount to the Columbia thing only, because it should never have been annexed.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Jones, Second Ward. Like many of you, last week I attended the Columbia Boone County Housing Summit. I am glad that the vast majority of you were there. There are only a few people missing. There were some notes that, for those of you who weren't there, for those of you who may not know, have noticed, there were very, very few low-income people actually in the room. The vast majority of the people in the room were the people making the rules, making the laws, making the ordinances, and groups that are supposedly supposed to be helping. Some of the groups, I question whether they are actually helpers or whether they're exacerbators. For example, the gentleman who says that he just can't build a house for less than $250,000. Yes, you can. You can build a two-bedroom, one-bath for less than $250,000. But yet he says that you cannot. But I would like for you to note that how few unhoused people were in the room and how few of people who are actually needing low-income housing, whether it be public housing or whether it be that they need housing that costs like $100,000, $150,000. Almost everybody there was people who can actually afford housing. Granted, I know that Kip and DeCarlin have both said that we need more rich people housing, but that's not actually what people are saying or what the actual truth is. The truth is that we have people who are living on the streets. We don't have rich people living on the streets. We have people who are dying out on the streets because they can't afford housing. We have an unrealistic number of people out on the streets because they cannot afford a roof over their heads. So I want you to think about what we did so that there were, we did, because even the gentleman who presented all the information, he said that we did not have very many people who completed the studies who were actually needing affordable housing. He said that it was mostly middle and upper income people who completed the studies. So I want you to think of what we can do better in the next time so that we can actually hear the voices of the people who need help the most. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. I decided to write some notes tonight, but the first story, right at 6 p.m. tonight, I got a phone call. The phone call involves our eastern side of the state. The husband left home at 11 a.m. this morning, and he had not been at home at 6 o'clock when I'd got to call. The police spotted the car. The gentleman was not in the car. We are having tornadoes on touching ground here in southern Missouri as I speak. I'm only telling you, pay attention tonight, because this is so close to the old Joplin story, if you remember it. First subject tonight, water. It needs to be number one. Recent commercial showing Kennedy, the one that was running for the president, wants to have fluoride removed from the drinking water. Need to move on this. Reverse osmosis to be a number one need here in Columbia. You've heard me speak this now. It's more factual. If we can have it in the public domain, it's not just Columbia, Missouri, and it's not Eugene. It's called very important. Housing. At the Housing Summit, I ask everyone to dream of new housing in subdivision form. How about an example of cargo ships, containers? We have them sitting here on the corner of Vandiver and Route B. These could be redone inside and out. They could be stacked. Use your imagination. Completion could be very short, could be the first year home trial. Why not get this going ASAP to begin saying, hey, we have done something? Transportation. I thought we was having a major meeting on transportation tonight. We need to have a permanent process. I've attended many meetings over the years, and every time before you all come along, there's somebody with a new idea and a new idea and a new idea, and nothing ever seems to stay permanent. When I speak permanent, you, the city manager, or whoever wants to step up, we need to stop the trials, have regular stops, regular times, and jobs on these routes. This will help those who have car breakdowns. Everyone keeps their job, no one loses. The city transportation could turn poverty into prosperity. Everyone is issued a card. This is my idea. Maybe they only pay after a solid year of riding the bus. Thank you.
Thank you, Eugene. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak? Oh, come to the microphone. We say it.
My name's Andrew Barnett. I was just wondering, from each of the city ward council members, what do you believe are the top five problems that could be fixed in our community?
So we usually do our comments at the end of the meeting, but you can ask.
Okay. Well, that was my question.
Okay.
Well, never mind then.
Oh. You want to say yours, Andrew? No, yours, okay.
You should say it again.
I was going to say you could say yours within your 3 minutes if you wanted. Okay. Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Hi, I'm Trey Trapani, First Ward. Chair of External Affairs for the University of Missouri's student government. I just wanted to let the public at large and the city council know we're looking now into ways to better integrate students into the public transportation system. A lot was mentioned about that tonight. To be honest with you, don't feel qualified enough to speak on any specific policies or actions we're taking right now, but as well as listening to this, we're looking into historic interactions of the university with the public transportation system, and we look forward to working with the city council in general on this issue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Hi, I'm Mackenzie Ortiz. I'm in the Sixth Ward. I don't usually speak, so this is different for me, but when homecoming was, Mizzou's homecoming, I took the bus home after a shift of canvassing over by 404 Tiger Lane. And while I was on the bus, I'm obviously a very privileged person. I was walking home. I had the privilege of hopping on a bus because the time was right. I heard a lot of people speaking about how they didn't know that the time was so delayed on that Saturday before homecoming. And I live here, but I don't know a lot about Mizzou sports or anything, so I could totally understand why they didn't know that either. Sorry, I'm so nervous. I don't know why.
You're doing great.
But I just really think that there should be a process for informing the public, especially people that rely on public transit, to know when the bus is going to be delayed. Because there weren't any flyers or any kind of like physical information, and I know that's important for people that don't have social media or like don't keep up to what's happening with Mizzou. Thank you.
Awesome, thank you. Anyone else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments, and we will start with Don Waterman.
Well, tomorrow is Election Day. Most of you know. I'm guessing that a number of you have already voted. I saw an article in the paper that I think it said about half of the 2020 turnout has already taken advantage of the early voting. And so if you have, thank you. And if you haven't, please get out and vote tomorrow. Again, I know the early voting has been very popular. The couple times I've been in the county government center since they've opened it up, the line has been, I'm going to say, 45 minutes plus. So there's certainly a need for that. And an interest in it, I should say. Emotions and passions are running very high during this election cycle. Don't feed into the ads. That's all I can say, because they demonize one is going to demonize the other, and we need to move beyond that. Emotion and passions are going to run high. There's going to be people celebrating Wednesday. There are going to be people that won't be because their candidate either did or didn't get elected. The thing that I would ask you to remember is that life goes on. I submitted a guest commentary to the Missourian on Wednesday. They published it on Friday. Basically to that extent that we've had, the U.S. has faced tough elections before. If you think about it, in 1864, we were actually actively shooting at each other during the presidential election. So thank God it hasn't gotten that far. We've been through tough times before. There's going to be tough decisions to be made, tough discussions to be had. Let's have those, but let's have those in a manner to where we can try to come to some sort of compromise, some middle ground, and where we can actively move forward. So that would be my plea, that regardless of what we wake up to Wednesday, who won, who lost, sun's going to come up Thursday, it's going to come up Friday, it's going to come up Saturday, and life is going to go on. And if the sun doesn't come up, we got bigger problems.
Yeah. Thank you, Don. Betsy.
Well, good point. I just wanted to comment a little bit about the transportation study, mainly that, you know, this is going to be some long, we're going to have a number of discussions about that. But I appreciated the comment about we need to do a better job of informing the folks that are currently riding the bus when we're going to have delays and things like that. So I did see that we have a new app. So we'll see whether this app works as well or better than other apps. That they're rolling out over, I think, the next couple of months, on where the buses are and when they're coming and when they're delayed. So hopefully that will help. The only other I really had nothing else on my list except for the gentleman's question about what the five most important things are. That's nice and broad. If you have five, you know, you have, and in no particular order, jobs, crime, housing, transportation, and climate. So I think that probably encompasses most of the stuff, although I guess it missed infrastructure and sewers.
Sewers are infrastructure.
I know, and sewers are the most important part of the infrastructure. That's all I had to say tonight. Please remember to vote, and I agree with Don. You know, the sun will come up, hopefully, after the election.
Valerie.
Thanks. Yeah, I like to highlight when I get a chance to speak things in the consent agenda that I think are particularly meaningful. We have a couple sewer projects, private connection being eliminated on Aldea, sewer rehabilitation, which is constantly going on throughout Columbia, care in place programs for our pipes. Looking at the map from this one, there's quite a bit of highlighted portion in the areas of the first ward that I know have a lot of problems with infiltration. And I appreciate these programs. They tend not to get a lot of attention because there's no digging involved. People don't realize that they're happening, but they're happening and they're affecting you. And I think it's great in this case. Also, the home weatherization grants that are coming up, thanks to the Neighborhood Services, Housing and Neighborhood Services. I'd like to plug that. That way people are aware of this happening, that there's something that in the future you'll be able to apply to help insulate and weatherize your homes and help obtain funding to do that, obtain small grants to do that. Lastly, I was absolutely thrilled to participate in the Boone County Housing Study day that we had last week. This is a huge thing for our neighborhood. If you're asking me, for our city, if you're asking me what I think the most important thing facing our city is, it's housing availability, housing affordability, and then infrastructure. and so this is a big deal. In keeping up with the expected growth of the city, we're looking at 37,000 houses, dwelling units needed in 20 years, I think they said. We have a pretty tall order in front of us. I'm looking at the implementation matrix from that study. There's about 12 policy recommendations that were assigned short term. That's 0 to 2 years, which is incredibly fast for some of these things. I'm looking at things like developing a leakage fee policy. We need to do a nexus study to support that. Creating a housing preservation inventory. And I'm looking to, I guess, kind of elevate the awareness so that we can stay on that, because we're going to need to start moving through those items to stay on this goal. The table that they have for the amount of housing that we need to add each 10-year fraction cannot be kept up with if we wait for these items to come back and present themselves. So I'll be staying in touch with city management to kind of find out how we get those things primed to move on.
Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Lisa.
I've got several things. The last meeting, report 6624, the Prairie View Stormwater. So since the last meeting, we made copies of the report and a memorandum and delivered it to all of the residents impacted. It was over 40 residents impacted, and they were hand-delivered to their homes. So a couple of things to keep in mind is that the report mentioned that, you know, 16% of the drainage is in the county, but 84% is in the city. And it also mentioned that, you know, in that span of 1,300 feet, you've got 300 feet that's city, but that's also going downhill. And so the next thing that I would appreciate some help with is I think that the next best step is to do what we talked about last week, 2 weeks ago, is schedule an interested parties meeting, a stakeholders meeting, because it's really going to be up to the residents if they're interested in doing anything else with it. It's not really up to us. It's going to be up to the residents. And then if they want us to, then I can bring that back to council and say that I'm going to need your help. So DeCarlin, I'd appreciate, I know I have to go over all of my list, but I'd appreciate a response to that and some direction on where you think we should go with that. Then on report 6624, the pollinator beautification report, I'd love to just have, and also to share it with council, just a general timeline on for the pilot project in Ward 2, how we see that being implemented and over what time frame. It was presented last week, and I'd like to, 2 weeks ago, and I'd like to see where we can go with that. Then I'd like to throw out a compliment to completely different subject, but to 311 and to the city's response. Late Friday night last week, I received a call from a senior citizen, and they were having some unsheltered individuals starting to move in around their property. And it was very interesting. You know, they called, and I happened to have picked up the phone. And I'm like, did you call 311? Anyway, long story short, we did get them to call 311, but I also reached out to the city through DeCarlin. And I would like to thank DeCarlin for always being so responsive. There's never a time that I have texted or called where he has not responded. And that is huge. And I want to say thank you publicly for that. I would also like to publicly thank the homeless outreach team. Not only did they help these individuals get to another place, but they also helped the citizen who called. They addressed the concerns. So it was handled really well, and I would like to compliment. I would appreciate help hearing from our fire chief. There have been reports about some increased homeless camps and fires and damage to properties. I'd like to know a little bit more about, are we just seeing more of this? Is it being reported differently? And ways that we can be proactive in helping to mitigate those issues. We also have a couple things with the Columbia Police Department. Congrats on the new recruits. I'd like to appreciate a report on how are things progressing. How can we as a city council help? Okay, how can we help as a city council? And then I'd like to know where we are with the CALEA certification. I remember learning more about that when all of the chiefs were being interviewed, and that was something that every single one of you had said that you would like us to have that certification. I'd like to learn a little bit more about where we are with that and how we can help you achieve that. Then last but not least, a couple of things just to chew on. I know we're going to be discussing in December the possibility of Tuesdays versus Mondays and when we get together for our retreats. But I wanted to just plant this concept just to chew on. I don't have any specific, you know, motion or anything, but I the concept of salary for council. So I know that if it passes, it can't be put into action until after, you know, a full election. None of us may ever be able to be the recipients, but we might be setting the stage as our city grows for improvement. And I think we need to think not about ourselves, but how we're, the decisions that we make and what we're doing to establish as our city grows. And so I'd just like us to think about that and maybe have a discussion in December if you deem that appropriate. And that's it. Oh, my top five. I did scribble those down. Thank you. So there's so many things because there's bullet points in between. So this is not in order. And the introvert in me is like, let me think about this and write this a little bit more. But safety, infrastructure, public health and well-being, housing, parks and rec. That's it.
All right, Roy.
I'm just going to do my five things. Keep it short so we can get out of here. public safety with emphasis on crime and crime prevention. You knew I was going to say that. Huh? And then I would also say jobs with adequate and equitable pay. And then housing with equal and fair housing. And then I would also say like public transit. And when I talk about housing, I would also speak of the unsheltered population and definitely coming up with a definition for homelessness.
Thank you, Roy. Nick.
Well, I appreciate the question about the five things. One of the things that I would say 2.5 years in is that the list gets longer all the time, and the interconnectedness of all the things that we face become all the more interconnected the longer I look at them. So I'd like to speak to some of these with things I intended to say anyway. Housing and homelessness is right at the top of the list for me personally. I realize this is really the reason I ran as much as anything else to be on the council. So the housing summit was a big deal, and we've been working toward that for a long time. The question now is, what do we do next? And I know there are plans being put in place for addressing that, but I, for one, and I know the rest of us are going to continue to be very vigilant about that and watching to see what we do there, and I'm excited about the possibility of what can happen there. A couple of other things I'll mention. The climate is important for me, and as I've been on the council, the infrastructure has been more and more important. So this is one of the reasons I'm excited about the EV chargers. One of the challenges we have about EVs being more usable is infrastructure. It's having the EV chargers there for people to use. And yes, EVs are expensive, Roy. It's one of the concerns I have about them. But as the prices go down, we want to set up an infrastructure that makes it possible for people to use them. And so I think that having those chargers in place now will be important. Public safety is important, and so I wanted to point to one thing in the consent agenda, and I'm very pleased to see that we approved the involvement of our city with Missouri Firefighter Critical Illness Trust and Pool. One of the things that has been increasing in awareness is that firefighters face a lot of hazards in going into homes that are burning, and that's because they run across substances that are harmful to their bodies and over time can have a long impact. So I'm grateful that that is a part of it and we can support them in that way. And then another concern for me is really those who are struggling in our community and those who are living in low income circumstances. So I wanted to mention one thing I learned more about just this past week. I had heard about this group before, but there's an organization in our town. They're all volunteers called Sleep in Heavenly Peace. This is a pretty much a national organization, but we have a local chapter. One of the things that when you put somebody in housing who doesn't have housing is that often they can go in there, but they don't have a bed to sleep on. So this organization builds beds, provides a mattress, all the linens, and a pillow for children who are in need of that. And they work with local agencies, they work with local faith groups, and to provide that. I think that's a really neat thing. I was awfully glad to learn more about it and to be made more aware of the things that folks in our community are doing outside government who are taking on these issues. And for us to fully address all these concerns we have, we need to be fully involved, and all of us need to be involved. So just wanted to raise that group up, too.
Thank you, Nick. So I have a couple things, one and then my five, so I'll make sure to list my five for sure. But first, I just have one note, is that we have a task force for the USS Columbia, and the chair of that task force has asked that we have another ex officio member be added, and that is our Columbia fire chief. I don't know where Brian just went. So I'd like to make a motion for staff to bring back legislation for council consideration to accommodate this request. Can I get a second for that?
Second.
Second by Roy. Mm-hmm. All those in favor of that request, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Any opposed? Okay. And then two, the top five priorities. You know, thinking about this, like so many, yeah, they're all so connected. And I think about, you know, at the heart of a lot of this is really just a connected community. And that's a connected community where we have safe and healthy neighborhoods with crime prevention and the creation of healthy and affordable housing, where we're looking at connecting our community for the transportation that is their desired transportation to get from point A to point B. And the infrastructure is sustainable and lasting, and that we're updating it as it is needed. And that the people are connected. We're seeing a lot, you know, you mentioned, Don, the election, and seeing the disenfranchising we're seeing happening between people and just neighbors not getting along with neighbors. And I think about the importance of a connected community is where that is not coming down to the street level. And so thinking of that is for communications from the city. And for me, the implementation of the plans that we keep doing, and in today's transportation study, the first part of it talks about the historic plans that have been done, and all of those that are sitting on shelves, or even in our own, you know, comprehensive plan where we have things that we want to incorporate. So one of my goals is that we're investing in the city organization to implement the plans that our community has. We need to reflect and respect on the inputs that they've put into that. And so thinking about that and how we can do that as an organization to really help us be the best version of ourselves. And with that means also then having clear processes so that people know what their utility bill means and what that goes and how our budget is developed. And then at the end of the day, it's really for the resources of the employee workforce, making sure we have enough for those who can help on the preventative side for some of our issues, on the boring administrative side that is very much needed, but maybe not as sexy. And then also on the proactive thinking towards the future and where our community needs to go. So those are just some of mine, but like you, they become bulleted, additional points happen and they're interconnected. So really it's just having everyone come together to weave the tapestry that we need for our community. Do we have any staff comments? Do you want anyone to speak for you to Carlin or any of these? Oh, pulling in the deputy, which is a different deputy city manager than was discussed earlier during public comment. Different deputy.
Different deputy. Matt Unrein, deputy city manager. Mr. Seawood wanted me to speak to Councilwoman Myers' request for the stakeholder meeting. That might not be the appropriate step, maybe more of a meeting of like a stakeholder meeting, perhaps. Interested party meetings are for projects that are budgeted and appropriated, and this is not. So we can help them organize themselves. We can use this space, and so we can help guide them on the organization of a CID if that's where they choose to go.
Do you think we should visit with the county about that? Was also part of the report?
Absolutely, because we want those county members to be part of that CID. And off the top of my head, I'm not sure if you can have a multi-jurisdictional CID. Does I hate to put the city councilor on the spot here either, but I'm not sure that they could be part of our.
You know, there are various funding mechanisms, and it's going to take some evaluation as to what would be the most advantageous. I wouldn't want to try to commit to one or the other at this point.
Yeah, I'm not wanting us to overly commit. I'm just responding to what was in the report, because that was recommended in the report that we consider visiting with the county, or, you know, the percentage of the county, and then the interest and parties meeting. So I'm taking the guidance from staff and then wanting to know what the next best steps are. So if the IP is not the next step, possibly sharing this information with the city leaders, sharing this with the county, and then letting us know maybe if we should meet or just have a phone conference or something, that would be great.
Absolutely.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yes, ma'am.
Any other staff comments? All right, I'll go ahead and adjourn us at 8:20.